Hello, and welcome to Stirring the Pot. You're listening to the voice of Vashon, KVSH, FMLP, 101.9, right here on beautiful Vashon Island. I'm Linda Nygaard, and with me in the studio today is our co-host, Mr. Tom Conway.
Howdy, howdy.
Hi, Tom.
How's it going?
We also have our intrepid engineer, Truman O'Brien, sitting at the board for us.
Good morning.
Hi, Truman.
Or afternoon.
It's afternoon.
It is afternoon.
My, how time flies
time
when you're having a good time. You know, it's nice to see you, Tom.
Nice to see you.
Always nice to see you.
When's the last time we saw each other?
A couple days ago.
Seems like forever.
Yeah, it was forever, darling.
Forever.
Yeah. Tom and I were talking earlier. This is sort of an aside that he didn't know what I was going to say, but you know how when you first talk to somebody on the phone and maybe, you know, you haven't known what they've been doing or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, and we were talking about sexy voices. I said to Tom, well, you know, what are you wearing? And then we laughed and he said, or I said, I guess, well, when Tom and I talk on the phone, we don't ask what you're wearing. We say, hi, Tom, what are you eating?
And it, trust me, it's just as lurid as it sounds. She starts off really slow because I'm not really, and she goes, hi, what are you eating? And then I'll say something, you know, really sexy like oatmeal.
Oh, with raisins.
Or toast with peanut butter and jelly.
Oh, mm. Sounds delicious. Mm.
Pancakes with syrup.
I'm having company for brunch tomorrow.
Oh, what are you going to make?
I don't know. Mm. I'm thinking of...
How many people?
Just two.
Okay.
Just two.
Manageable.
And I'm thinking two different menus. I have a recipe for a croissant overnight casserole kind of thing that's got eggs
good.
And sausage and croissants and cheese and that, and mm-hmm. I think a vegetable, maybe an onion. I don't know. And then I'm also thinking of
a sprinkle of garlic powder.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Yeah. I'm thinking of French toast and eggs and bacon, which, you know, everybody loves.
Yeah.
And I like to make a real custardy French toast, let it soak for a long time and use Texas toast.
I was going to say, what kind of bread do you use?
Texas toast. Or challah.
Yeah.
Challah is really good. So anyway,
I'd say they should be happy with that. Are
Either
they picky
one.
Eaters?
No, they love everything.
Oh, good.
They're from the South.
They
eat everything.
Girl?
Yeah. Anyway, okay, enough of that.
Enough of that nonsense.
So, you know, given that we're right up against a major eating holiday,
yay.
I think we should just get started. Let's just dig in.
Let's dig in.
What you been doing?
Well, you know... you know, this is the trouble. You know, we might have to start starting the show with seniors in the kitchen or something. Because it's
the
like,
battle of the grandpas.
I'm trying to remember what did I do to me? Where did I park? I can't. You know, I had the good fortune to take a lot of you might know on the island Kurt Timmermeister because he makes a really good cheese. But the dairy now is no longer. He's not making cheese anymore.
Right.
But he was hosting some classes, and I was lucky enough to go to one. And I went to two. I'll talk about the other one next time. But this one was about French bistro cooking.
Yum!
And the chef was Jay Guerrero, and he had worked at Prune in New York, and then all
Prune.
Sorts of places in Seattle, and has quite a following. Really nice guy, and really. Sort of brings fancy French cooking to a very sort of home approachable. I like that home-approachable. Mm-hmm. And we made we made chocolate mousse, and we made let's see.
You made duck breast.
We made duck breast. Man, oh man.
And some potatoes.
Oh, and these Robichon.
Tell me about the potatoes.
The potatoes were killer. They are, they're named after Joel Robichon and,
famous.
Yeah. He's a very decorated, Michelin starred chef. I think he had something like, my retention is, it's like something like 31 stars, just craziness. And, he was also considered to have the world's best mashed potato recipe.
Okay.
So if you're like I am and, you know, you swoon over mashed potatoes, it's not that what's really great about almost all these recipes during this day long class is it was more about the quality of the ingredients and technique, you know? So it wasn't like 82 items to make mashed potatoes. It was like four, maybe five with salt.
Well, what was the trick?
So here's how you, you want to hear how you do it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I memorized it.
Okay, good.
Because it's so easy. But it was, anyway, so the potato that mimics sort of his recipe best in the U.S. is a Yukon Gold.
Okay.
So you boil 2 pounds of Yukon Gold potatoes until they're, you know, like fork tender. You put a fork or knife tender. You put it in and it goes in the potato easily. And then you drain the water and... you get a dish towel and you put your, you know, you hold the dish towel and put one potato in the dish towel and you just rub the skin off with the dish towel. It comes off.
Oh, you boil them in the skin.
Boiling in the skin.
Okay.
So then what you do, you've got 2 pounds of potatoes. They're still hot as heck. Mm-hmm. And get your big mixing bowl and you rice them. And for those of you who don't know what a ricer is, it looks like a giant garlic press.
Yeah.
You know, you put the potato in there, you press the two handles and it oozes out like a Play-Doh play factory, you know.
Yes. Bunch of spider webs coming out.
Yeah, exactly. Like. Yeah. And he said by doing that, you're crushing the cells of the potato so they don't become gummy or sticky. This is, you know.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So then you put in... you put in about a tablespoon of kosher salt, but then here's sort of the trick. You're going to go, well, what isn't good with this much butter? But he then puts in butter as an emulsification. And again, for those of you not familiar with what that means in cooking, it's so you blend the butter to the point of where it becomes part of the potato. It's not going to separate. And so what you do is you just fold in chunk at a cube at a time, two and a half sticks, which is a cup and a quarter of butter. And it's got to be really cold. Can't have it warm. You don't warm.
Oh, okay.
And then you're just doing it until that one melts and you put in another cube and another cube.
Hang on.
Yeah.
Am I using a big spoon? I'm not using a masher.
You're not using a beater.
Okay.
You're using like a spatula and you're sort of folding it.
Okay, like a rubber spatula.
Like a rubber spatula or a nice wooden spoon.
Okay.
And you're incorporating it. And then you incorporate it till all the butter... is fully incorporated and it just looks so light and beautifully fluffy. And then you take a warm cup of milk. He said, you don't have to do half and half. You don't have to do cream. Milk works just fine. That milk is, for some reason, milk is what you want. Not
okay.
Maybe it's like that was enough fat already.
So, with all that butter.
So yeah. The milk has to be hot, you know, not warmish to hot. Mm-hmm. And you stream that in and you mix it in, fold it in and fold it in. And then a little bit of ground pepper to taste. And it just makes, I forgot like the big, so you can eat them like that. But then if you really want to get your Michelin star, he puts them in a sieve, you know, like, and so he takes the a spatula and he pushes it through a sieve and it just comes out.
So they're sort of being processed again.
Again, you're taking all the contents that are now incorporated and you're pushing them through a sieve. And they're just light and
so
fluffy.
Why were they so much better than regular mashed potatoes? What was it? The texture? Was it the flavor? What knocked you out?
I think it was both. The texture was really nice. It was like, you know, like sort of almost marshmallowy. If you can have that, you know, like sometimes, and I don't think this is a problem, but sometimes mashed potatoes can be a little glutinous,
gluey.
You know, gluey.
Yeah.
Or like a little pasty.
Or a little lumpy.
A little lumpy, exactly. Mm-hmm. But if you got gravy on them, who cares?
Who cares? Well, that sounds wonderful. I think we can all do that.
Yeah,
how many pounds of potatoes?
2 pounds.
2 pounds and a cup and a half of butter.
A cup and a half of butter.
And a cup of milk.
Uh-huh, and you add the butter, a cube at a time until it incorporates.
I love this. Yeah. I'm going to try it.
Yeah, and the sieve at the last thing.
And the ricer.
He did one batch without... And the 2 pounds, he split them in half.
Mm-hmm.
He did one without the sieve and one with the sieve.
Mm-hmm.
And you could tell the difference, but the one that didn't go through the sieve, there was nothing
was
wrong
fine
with
anyway.
It. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. Wow. Well, good. So you finally learned how to mash potatoes.
I can mash exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I'm so glad you did. Yeah.
And later, if you want, I can tell you about this other thing we made that I thought was so great, a gastrique. But I'll just leave that to if you, we have time for that.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, a gastrique. You know, cool. It's such a mystery. And it's not.
It's really, it's pretty, another thing that's really...
We better just talk about it for a minute.
Okay, let's talk about it. We're here. Hey, let me put down my pie. I have pie. Yeah, we'll talk about that too.
We'll talk about pie in a minute.
So we made this thing called a gastrique. And it's basically just like a really lovely sweet sour sauce.
Mm-hmm.
And you basically are caramelizing sugar and water and adding vinegar.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're putting in what you like. And in this case, it was a cranberry gastrique. So we had rosemary steeping in it and cranberries.
Mm.
And you get it to be a certain thickness. You know, like you could run your finger across the back of a spoon and
like
it would separate.
Like,
yeah, it doesn't have to be terribly thick. Mm-hmm. And you're not using it like a gravy. It's just a little,
right.
What's the word, French word? Soupçon.
Soupçon.
Accoutrement. I'm sorry. When my French is so bad, it makes me laugh. But anyway, it's a really good, and we put it on the duck, and it added this sort of lovely brightness to what was already great.
Well, you know,
duck.
I'm a big, huge fan of cranberries, so that sounds delicious.
Oh, and you know what? I got it. Here's a secret for the duck, really quick.
Yeah.
He said you should start duck, which everybody probably would do, but who knows? Fat side down, you score it. You know, like you do like a ham.
Okay. Yeah.
And you do fat side down.
Mm-hmm.
And you start in a cold pan with no fat because there's so much on that.
Yeah.
And you render it out and it gets a crispy top. And you basically 80% of your cooking is on one side and then 20% just on the other side.
Because you don't want it too done.
No. And then you want to have it rest.
And then it rests and then you have some cranberry gastrique.
That's right.
Well, you know, rosemary is a fabulous complement to cranberry.
It is.
In some recipes I've looked at or have rosemary, and it's really, really nice. Yeah.
What's your cranberry choice at Thanksgiving?
Oh, you know, should we talk about cranberries for a minute?
Sure.
Okay.
I'm not going where.
You know, I am a cranberry purist, and to have Thanksgiving dinner without regular cranberries that are just boiled with sugar and water, I feel like I haven't had real Thanksgiving dinner. I don't want horseradish in it. I don't want orange. I don't want cinnamon. I don't want any of that. I want the cranberries.
Wow.
To be the star. However,
that's a tough position around most.
Yeah, because everybody
tables.
Wants to be fancy.
Yeah.
And I, you know, for me, I just like regular cranberries.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is because I like cranberries on my turkey sandwich afterwards, of course.
The best.
And they have to be. You don't want horseradish and orange and all that in your turkey sandwich. I don't, anyway. So, you know, cranberries. I went to a cranberry festival somewhere near Oysterville several years ago.
Oh, Willapa Bay area? And
yeah.
On the coast?
Yeah, and it was fascinating to see how they're harvested. And they, you know, they just lay in these big bogs. It's like a lake topped with cranberries. I thought I would let you know that the USDA says that in 2024, the cranberry production is 560,000 barrels of cranberries. I don't know how big a barrel is, but they're pretty big.
And that's in the U.S.?
That's the U.S. And Long Beach Peninsula has been farming cranberries since the late 1800s.
Can I just interject something real quick?
Yeah.
As I'm chewing on pecan pie. A friend on the island, Bill, his grandparents had a bog, and one of my favorite possessions of his is the family sign that just has an arrow, like you're going out to the field, and it just says Cleavers, but it's like the
Cleavers.
It's the coolest font ever.
Yeah,
and that's from his family's cranberry bog.
And his last name? That's his
Cleaver,
last name?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought I was going to say cranberries.
It's just the coolest sign.
Yeah.
It has, you feel like it had, there's so much, like if you held on to it, you could sort of like imagine what it went through for the last 120 years.
Oh, yes, you can. Well, you know, so purist that I am, I was treated over the weekend to dinner with my son and his wife, and she made cranberry salsa. And I thought, I died and went to heaven.
Was it not so cooked, right? Just
no.
fresh?
No. You just take the cranberries and put them in your blender or your food processor, process them up, and it's got a jalapeno, it's got cilantro, lime juice, and I don't, maybe a little garlic in it.
What'd you put it on?
She served it with little tiny pieces of crostini that had been toasted, and on top of that, she put some labneh, maybe, or it wasn't cream cheese, and it wasn't hummus, but something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Feta, maybe? I don't know. I forget. I just ate it with the bread and the cranberries, and it's very spicy. It's a little sweet and tart. It's so good. And you can look up a recipe for that. That's a great tip. Yeah.
Because I love it when there are things you think about it as one thing, like, mm-hmm. you know, the Thanksgiving mm-hmm. cranberry. But when you can use it as something else, and just the brightness of a cranberry on a salsa it'd be almost like, you know, how tomatillo has that brightness to it.
Oh, yeah. And that's what the cranberries do.
Nice.
And it's a puckery kind of spice, and mm-hmm. it's hot. It's jalapeno Ooh. Hot. You know, with spicy cranberries. It's really good.
What was for dinner?
Filet mignon.
Oh, man.
With a homemade herb
butter.
Your kids
are employed. Oh. Your children
are
employed.
Yeah, my kids are doing well. And they're both really good cooks. So it was a beautiful, beautiful dinner.
Were they a good cook when you were growing them?
When
you were growing them.
My son, Lucas, has always been curious in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And his first mastery was Dutch pancakes, you know, Dutch babies
yes.
in the oven. That was when he was about 14, I think. He made those for us. And as an adult, he's been experimenting a lot with his smoker and the grill. Mm-hmm. And so that's what these filets were. He smoked them for hours.
Nice.
And then made an herb butter for them. And it was a beautiful dinner. Lots of beautiful things. But the cranberries knocked me out. They really did.
I found a recipe if you're interested.
Oh, heck yeah.
Of cranberries?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hang on.
Okay. In case you just tuned in, this is our favorite wingman,
yes.
Truman.
So here it is. 12-ounce bag of fresh cranberries, 3/4 cup of white sugar, mm-hmm. 3 bunches of cilantro chopped or to taste, 1 bunch of green onions cut into 3-inch lengths, 1 medium jalapeno pepper seeded mm-hmm. and minced, 2 medium limes juiced, and a pinch of salt.
Yes,
there
that's
it,
it.
And that's like the salsa?
Yeah, that's the salsa.
Yep. Wow.
And then I've been looking at recipes for
turkey tacos. That'd be good.
Oh, wouldn't that?
Yeah.
I've seen also where they serve it on top of a block of cream cheese. Remember mm-hmm. how in the 80s we did the shrimp and shrimp cocktail on the cream cheese?
Yes, the moldable. Oh, God. I just have to interject because I was just thinking of like all those bad molds they made. Like, you uh-huh. know, like you'd make cheese pine cones and
mm-hmm,
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I saw this thing that was like produced by the company. Like it was actually, they wanted it to be a thing. And I'm thinking, I thought it was like a Saturday Night Live skit. And they were making hummus molds where they would mix hummus with cream cheese, and they had these molds they put them in. Then you have like a hummus cream cheese turkey.
Oh, my God. That's worse than tofurkey.
I think so.
Remember tofurkey?
I didn't see the magic in that recipe.
Oh, yeah. Well, anyway, back to cranberries. Okay. One more little tidbit is that Washington is the 5th largest grower of cranberries in the United States. They grow more prolific on the East Coast.
Oh, they do?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I wonder why. Maybe because it's colder?
I don't know why. I'm not an agriculturist, but yeah. And then Oregon is 7th. So, you know.
Just like normal. Sorry. My apologies to Oregonians everywhere.
But anyway, I was just going to say to people, you know, it's really interesting to go to the cranberry farms. And the farmers love to talk about their cranberries. And there's all kinds of, there's around Oysterville and where did we say? Willapa Bay.
Willapa Bay, and
many
Beach
places.
And Ocean.
Yes. And you can get cranberry everything there.
Yeah, and they have to flood them to harvest. They mm-hmm. flood the fields to mm-hmm. harvest them.
And then they have giant rakes.
Yeah.
They're giant rakes, and they rake those cranberries into buckets, really, you know?
You know, it's always so interesting when you... And cranberry is one of the original... It's an American fruit. It doesn't mm-hmm. it doesn't grow... It didn't come from Europe.
Right.
It's
it came
native
here. It's
to
from here.
This continent. And it's so funny when you wonder, like, how did somebody... come to the conclusion that they could make a commercially viable product
out
of a cranberry.
Well, yes, and speaking of commercially viable, Ocean Spray, you know, that's the one we always think of for cranberry juice or cranberries in the can.
Cran apple.
Ocean Spray has 200 cranberries per can, whether it's the jellied or the whole cranberries.
Oh.
So, I mean, that's what they tell me. And so that's what Ocean Spray says. So, you know, it would be fun to count them.
Someday on Jeopardy. I'm going to be on Jeopardy, and they're going to go, number of...
number of cranberries.
And I'll say...
Yeah.
What is 200, Alex, or whoever the host is?
Right, yeah. So anyway, that's kind of the cranberry thing. Now, where were we before?
Can I do my cranberry thing?
Yeah, what's your cranberry thing?
Because I brought a bunch of recipes that I just keep in my Thanksgiving file.
Oh, okay.
This is very much a child. This is my mom's. This is my childhood.
Good. This is vintage.
And it's always made in this beautiful copper jello mold.
Oh, sure.
And
is it like the tiered one?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. But it has a hole in the middle, like a boot,
okay.
like a boot
kick. Oh, sure. Sure,
yeah.
sure.
But it's really, really simple. But it's really, really good.
Okay.
Maybe because you grow up with it, it's really, really good. But it's, you know, two packages of Knox gelatin, a cup of water, a can of whole cranberry sauce.
Okay.
A can of crushed pineapple, the small can, nothing huge.
Okay.
A cup of chopped pecans and a cup of sugar. And you basically pour the boiling water into the gelatin, and then you pour everything else in there, and then you put it in your mold.
You mean it's just like a one-pot deal?
It's a one-pot deal, yeah.
And then you let it sit in the fridge for a while.
Exactly. Actually, I'm sorry. You boil the pineapple, sugar, and cranberries together to get them all, to get the sugar dissolved. And then you add the gelatin to the water and dilute it and boil it again with that one cup of water. Yeah.
Well, and there's no mayonnaise in it.
Well, our neighbor, when we lived next door in South Carolina, I'll think of it in a minute. But she would always, put mayonnaise mayonnaise. She'd do mayonnaise and then she'd do Miracle Whip, you know, in the middle.
Well, yeah.
Because you wanted that was like a little extra something special.
Tangy.
Tangy, baby.
Tangy. You know, that was the period of life when everyone made Aspix.
Yes.
And when I was a kid, my mom had a friend. She was a single woman. And
Tell people what an Aspix is just in case.
Just a minute.
Okay. Oh, guy.
So.
This is how she is. This is how she is when she's off mic. It gets ugly. It just puts me. She goes,
Tom, wait a minute.
She goes, the show says it's Linda Nygaard. Doesn't say Tom Conway.
It does too. anyway, she used to bring a lot of potlucks when you're a kid, you know, a lot of neighbors coming and family and all of that. And every time she came, she brought her tomato Aspic, and it was tomatoes and green olives and tomato juice and gelatin and, oh man, celery. It was terrible. And it was like just the running joke of everyone who knew her. Oh, here comes, and I won't say her name. Here comes so-and-so with her Aspic. Okay, so
that was funny.
Aspic, and I don't know what the definition of it is. It's a jellied kind of savory salad of olden days, and I don't
gelatinous.
Does anyone make them anymore? Is there such a thing? I don't think. Well, I've stuck.
They're usually the brightest picture in any old cookbook.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They are.
They almost look neon.
And there's all different kinds.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, that's what was her molded salad. And I think I might want to make one and see what it really was like.
You send me a picture.
You want to taste it?
No, you send me a picture.
Okay. Okay.
I'll put it on the crostini.
That'll be really good. Okay. So, Tom.
Yeah, what up?
Let's talk a little bit about Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Since we're coming right up to it. What are you doing for Thanksgiving?
I am going over to a friend's house, and it's like her family and friends. Mm-hmm. And
is it a big crowd?
She said 14.
Oh, that's a nice size.
Yeah.
Dinner.
And I'm in charge. So there's going to be like a couple desserts, and I'll make one of them.
Mm-hmm.
last year I was sort of surprised. I think I made pecan, and I made two. I made pecan and pumpkin. And it can't be that they weren't good. But it was like people ate other, they had other desserts. It was sort of like, I realized that I was expecting everyone to love pumpkin and pecan. And this group was more about this other thing. And it was like a cheesecake. And, you know, stood up by a cheesecake. Mm-hmm. The ultimate insult. Yes.
Like, so what are you taking this year?
Do tell how you make the crumb crust, please.
And the water bath. Yeah.
Let's see, eggs and cream cheese. Oh, such a stretch. Okay, sorry.
That ranks right up there with Clafoutis.
Oh, Clafoutis. Never. So, no, I love cheesecake.
I know you do.
It has a place. But this year I'm going to make an apple pie.
Oh.
Because everybody likes apple
everybody
pie.
Everybody likes apple pie.
Yeah, and I'll make whipped cream for it. Even though I prefer ice cream, but I'll make whipped cream.
Yeah, I prefer ice cream too, but that's a lot after Thanksgiving
dinner. And it's always, you know, it's always a burden on, I don't know anyone. I really don't. I think I can go to any of my friends' refrigerators and freezers and open up the freezer, and it looks like a Rubik's Cube. There's not an inch of space in anyone's freezer.
I know. There's no room.
So it's sort of a cruel hostess gift to bring ice cream.
Well, do you have room for this? It's like bringing something that has to go in the oven when the oven's full. You know, you can't do that.
I know. What I always think is sort of surprises me, and I raise my eyebrow in judgment, is when somebody brings something and they make it at your house.
I know.
You're cooking dinner.
But excuse me?
Let's get the rules here straight. you be doing that at your house and bring it.
Bring it done.
No, I don't have a serrated knife that's 12 inches long. You know, God, they're very specific. Yeah. Do you have a coal wood bowl for my for my Caesar salad? Yeah. No, I don't have an oak and a walnut with that. No, no,
no.
The tannins are all wrong for that Caesar salad.
Oh, people.
But I love them. I won't. It was nothing. What's up? What's going on over there?
Well, so I wanted to tell you about my Thanksgiving.
Oh, how's your Thanksgiving?
Because you were supposed to ask me.
Well, I was playing the male role, which is just talking about myself.
You always do.
I do. And then I go
like, I have to remind you to ask me about me.
Are you? You need to get a little, you need to get a placard.
I'm going to get
like,
a sign.
Remember me?
I'm here too.
I'm here too. Okay, let me try it again. Okay,
we'll edit that out.
We're going to go back.
Okay.
Hey, Linda, what are you doing for Thanksgiving?
I'm going to some dear friend's house. And
nice.
I'm really happy about it. There'll be six of us.
On island?
Yes, on island,
no
on the fairy. Water.
Sweet. Oh, sweet, on the...
On the water, sweet Whoa. Dog, fire in the fireplace. Mm. There'll be six of us. It'll be really fun. And I'm taking cranberries.
Cranberry jello salad.
My regular cranberries.
Okay.
Because, you know, we don't want horseradish cranberries. And I'm taking sweet potatoes in my special sweet potatoes that I make.
Which, oh, do tell.
Oh, well, I parboil the sweet potatoes and, uh-huh. and then I slice them.
Are they skinned or not skinned?
They're skinned.
Okay.
I skin them and parboil them uh-huh. and then slice them. They're like not, don't boil them very long. They just need to get a little tender.
Gotcha.
And then slice them at about a half an inch thick, and then you lay them on a cookie sheet, mm-hmm. and you have made a mix of maple syrup and butter and cinnamon.
I like those two things. Those three things are good.
And then you baste the sweet potatoes with that while they roast in the oven, and they're really, really good.
Any marshmallows there?
No. We talked about it because we all love that. And, you know, I considered it. They said, do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all love marshmallow sweet potatoes. But I'm going to do the other ones this time.
I think that's a good idea. I think the marshmallow thing is a nostalgic.
It is.
A love of nostalgia. But I really prefer it with just this.
The sweet potatoes. Yeah. And they're really good that way. They get a little bit leathery. The texture's really different. They're not mushy. They're a little chewier.
Nice.
And they've just got a roasty texture to them. So
that
I'm
going
to do that. And I'm taking a pecan pie.
God bless you, child.
So, yeah.
If you have any left, save me a slice, please.
Oh, I will.
Hey, I'll talk about that in a minute. I knew we were going to talk about pie, so I'll wait till we get to that.
Yeah, we have to talk about pies.
Yeah.
Is it time to thank our sponsors, I think? We need to say thank you. We're grateful for so many things this year, and we're really thankful that our sponsors hang in there with us because we couldn't do this without you.
No, they're amazing.
Yeah,
Voice
they are.
Of Vashon thanks Windermere Real Estate for its support, making our community information programming and our emergency alert service possible. Find them on the web at WindermereVashon.com.
Support for Voice of Vashon is provided by Palouse Winery. Award-winning wines are available for tasting on their covered patio noon to 5 Friday through Sunday. For private event inquiries, to see the music schedule, or to make a reservation, visit PalouseWinery.com.
And we're back. Hi, I'm Linda Nygaard, sitting here with Tom Conway and Truman O'Brien.
What
and
happened to the part where you're going to call me the fabulous Tom Conway?
Oh, the fabulous Tom Conway, the well-known, renowned.
No, we don't need to go that far. The insufferable Tom Conway.
You're listening to Stirring the Pot on Voice of Vashon 101.9. I have a few little tidbits, sort of scattered information
cool.
that I'd like to share.
Do share.
We all know Tom Douglas
yeah.
in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
I interviewed him years ago when he was first opening the Dahlia Lounge.
Oh.
And he was the most wonderful, warm, lovely man
oh, good.
To interview. And, you know, he was new. I mean, it was a long time ago.
Do you remember what the restaurant was he did before the Dahlia
Lounge?
I don't.
I didn't go to that one.
It was, I think he was managing it. I don't think it was his restaurant, but he was the chef. It was Cafe Sport.
Oh, no. See, I don't know that.
Yeah. That's yeah. when I first yeah. time I ever had apple oh. sausages. Fancy breakfast.
Really
yeah.
fancy.
Yeah. Apple.
Anyway, Tom, you know, has done many, many things in his life as far as being a chef and opened several restaurants and closed several restaurants and done several things. Now, did you know that he has a radio show?
Uh-uh.
Tom Douglas has a radio show, and it is hosted in his kitchen,
mm-hmm.
and it's his wife and his daughter.
Huh?
Loretta's there, and his daughter Bridget is there. You can watch it live on YouTube, or you can buy a ticket and go. And he fixes breakfast for the audience, and then the audience participates in asking questions. They have a food trivia game, and I guess there's lots of laughter. Hmm. And it's called the Hot Stove Society.
Okay.
So you can look it up on the web. It's www.hotstovesociety.com/radio show. And you can buy tickets ahead of time online and go.
Do you have an idea about how many people are in his audience?
You know, I don't. I uh-huh. would imagine it's not very big.
Like 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or 10.
Or 20.
Maybe, yes. Kitchen.
Maybe like somewhere.
I wonder if it's like he has a demo kitchen in his house or something.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It says his kitchen, and I want to go. I think it would be really fun to go.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch it on YouTube first. And then I just wanted to say that because there's so many things going on in the world of cooking that we just can't keep up with it all. And I love Tom Douglas.
Yeah.
And I think if he is doing something like that, it would be really interesting to go and fun.
He was one of the first Seattle chef, well, the Seattle chefs that I glummed on to his cookbooks. I really liked what mm-hmm. he made. Mm-hmm. I'd had like a really, it suited my palate. Like,
well, again, yeah. approachable.
Yeah, approachable.
He wasn't interested in being, you know, the supreme chef of fancy, fancy. Mm-hmm. Although his food is fancy, it could be fancy. Mm-hmm. Many different styles of food, of course. But I found that his cookbooks, especially is it a pie cookbook he has?
Oh, Serious Pies, yeah.
Yes, and I love that cookbook. I have it, mm-hmm. and I love it. It's I have made his coconut pie, coconut mm-hmm. cream pie, which he's famous for, and it was good. It was, you know, yeah. his recipes work, I guess, is the point.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, anyway, there's that. And then...
good tidbit.
We were talking about Thanksgiving, and you know me, I'm on the computer a lot, and I go down a lot of rabbit holes on the computer, mm-hmm. and I start looking at things, and I found this tidbit about Thanksgiving, and in, excuse me, in the early 1900s, there was a day in New York mostly, in Manhattan, I think, called Ragamuffin Day, and it was on November 26th. And the entry that I was looking at was November 26, 1911. And children ran rampant through Manhattan. They wore garish masks modeled after George Washington, Uncle Sam, and various political figures. Others they were ragamuffins, and so others smudged their cheeks and had ragged clothes to look like hobos. And they would go door to door and knock on people's doors and say, anything for Thanksgiving? So it was sort of like a cross between Thanksgiving and Halloween. And this went on for years and years and years, and it kind of became a kind of a ruffian sort of thing, you know, where people weren't real crazy about these ragamuffins showing up at their door on Thanksgiving. But it came to be that the, well, I don't know that it came to be, but there was a certain opinion at the time that it was mostly immigrant people who were doing this because they didn't understand Thanksgiving. They didn't have their own Thanksgiving in Ireland or Italy or wherever they came from. Thousands of ragamuffins would wreak havoc by pelting pedestrians with confetti and flour. They hitched rides on the fender of moving cars. They blasted horns. They tried to ride other people's horses. They were generally, it says, they were generally enjoying themselves to the limit of their temporary freedom. And then in 1956, the New Yorkers decided that's enough.
Wow.
So then it became illegal to do that.
Yeah, I'd never heard of that.
And I hadn't heard of it either, but it was called Ragamuffin Day. And I just thought
it almost sounded like Black Friday shopping.
Oh, I stay home on Black Friday.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, Lord. I wouldn't do that. Hey, let's talk about pie.
If we must.
For those of you who don't know, Tom and I love pie, and we like to bake pie, and we have a lot of friends who like to eat pie. So it all works out really well for all of us. And this year, we were just chatting about pie, and Tom had watched a video of a YouTube video of a chef making a different sort of method with regular pecan pie. So we were talking about it and decided, well, let's try some experimental things with our old tried and true pies. And my favorite pie is pecan pie. And so I've made it for 1,000 years. And
you don't look a day over 900.
I realize I shouldn't have said that. And, you know, I've tried many different ways with crusts. And so Tom and I were talking about blind baking. And I had never blind baked the crust for the pecan pie. No recipe says you should do that. Then I was looking in one of my rabbit holes, and it also said you always should blind bake anything with eggs in it. Always. If your pie has eggs in it, blind bake your crust. So I thought, well, that's my pecan pie. So my assignment for this week was to bake a pecan pie using a new method that I hadn't used before. And Tom's assignment was to try the new pumpkin pie recipe.
Yes, ma'am.
So tell me about your pie.
Oh, sure. You know, I had a tried and true recipe, and I did it like, I think it was about a month ago, to try it out with a fresh pumpkin. And it was okay, but I was kind of underwhelmed by it. I don't know. I used to think it was pretty fab, and then I was going, eh.
You know, I'm always underwhelmed when people use a pumpkin. I swear, again, this goes back to childhood, but Libby's.
Yeah.
Well, is the best canned pumpkin.
It really is good. It's and the thing that, it's one of those pies where I don't mind if somebody scrapes the filling out and just eats and leaves the crust.
I know.
Because the crust is usually pretty underwhelming because it has a real sog factor. So I was looking around to see if there were some, you know, new and wonderful pumpkin pie recipes. And I follow this website and this YouTube channel, Chef Steps. And the head honch in the kitchen, the chef, head chef, is Grant Creeley, I think is how you pronounce his name. He's really great. He's very animated, has a fun sense of humor, is quirky as heck, and he's fun to watch because he sort of puts the science behind it and tells you why he's doing something. So he had a pie recipe for pumpkin, and he had tried a bunch, and he sort of went back to the Libby pie recipe and then just sort of, you know, took his culinary chops. Do you like it?
I'm just having a bite.
Isn't it custardy good?
So good.
It's really good.
It's really creamy.
Really creamy. And that's kind of the difference. It's not so,
There's no grainy in it.
It's not grainy. Mm-hmm. It's very...
And your crust is crisp.
Thank you very much. Yes, it is, ma'am.
It's quite beautiful, honey.
Thank you. I know. I'm so proud of that crust. So I watched this. He went through how he did it. And so I incorporated those changes, and I was really happy with it. They were sort of surprising in a couple ways. Like, basically, if you're on the can of the Libby pumpkin, mm-hmm. It's that recipe with a few exceptions. He goes nuts on the eggs because he said
I watched that. Remember, we watched that video together. I was just astounded.
Yeah. And so I did it based on the weight he wanted you to use, mm-hmm. which changes, like, my little chickens, they're not right. huge commercial chicken eggs. They're Tommy's homegrown, mm-hmm. you know, and mm-hmm. the girls give it their best, but they're really a medium to a large egg. So mm-hmm. it took three eggs and four egg yolks. Or was it five egg yolks? It's five egg yolks.
I thought it was a total of six.
It was six, but this was my modification to his recipe.
Oh, got it.
Based on his recipe, I did three whole eggs and five egg yolks. And then you follow the recipe the same, except you don't put in their sugar amount. You use sweetened condensed milk.
Oh, yeah.
And if you want to see, there's a video. You can just do a search for Chef Steps Perfect Pie, and you'll get to see his whole evolution to making this new pumpkin pie. But the real revelation is, and I don't know why I used to poo-poo it, but I didn't want to blind bake. Mm. Because, and for those of you who don't know what blind baking is, you put on a mask. No, I'm kidding. You get a cane, and no, that's not funny. You blind baking is when you basically bake a pie crust without any filling, so it's crispy all over, underneath, mm-hmm. on top, where the filling goes, and then you add the filling later, so you have a crispy. And you usually do it with custard and cream pies, mm-hmm. and things mm-hmm. like that. You don't do it with like a double crusted apple pie or a cherry pie or anything like that. But you do it with like custard and cream pies.
Wet pies.
That's mm-hmm. right. Wet pies.
Yeah.
So anyway, you roll out the dough and you put it in a pie plate, and then you crimp it and do like you normally mm-hmm. would. And then you dock it, meaning you, put just a few, he said just like three or four little fork punctures mm-hmm. into the bottom to let steam out. And then you put, I do parchment paper. I wad up parchment paper so it's really flexible. And then I open it back up and I pour in weights. And the mm-hmm. weights can be beans. They can be
rice.
They can be pennies. They mm-hmm. can be anything that'll keep that crust in place. Mm-hmm. So the steam doesn't make it rise and sort of blow up out of the
and it's
pan.
Important, I think, to put enough weights in there so it comes up the side of the pie yes. crust too, so the top doesn't shrink down like happens sometimes.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You almost want to create like a cone inside, like where you push all the beans and the yep. rice or the pennies yep. up to the side to keep the sides mm-hmm. up and the top from sliding down.
Right.
So you do that at four. I do it for 425 for 20 minutes mm-hmm. or 25 minutes, mm-hmm. and then you gently remove the parchment paper and mm-hmm. weights. You put it back in the oven at 350 for another 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then it totally crisps up.
It does.
And then you take it out and you let it cool to room temperature.
One little hint is sometimes the crimped part of the crust will get too brown. Mm-hmm. So then we just put some foil over it. And
yeah,
keep it
absolutely.
Baking.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it doesn't burn. But that part's really important, I think. It should be in there longer than you think it should.
Exactly, yeah.
And I think one of the things that I'm sorry to rain on your parade here.
Oh, it's okay. I'm used to it.
But what happens is that pie crust gets kind of caramelized in a way. It's uh-huh. like it's toasty. It's a different flavor.
Yeah.
It's a deeper, richer flavor,
I think. It has almost like a really wonderful cracker mm-hmm. cracker-like mm-hmm.
yeah.
body to it.
Yeah.
It's super flaky because mm-hmm. it's nothing stopping it from letting out all the steam that yeah. then creates the crispy part.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
In prior pumpkin pies, did you pre-bake the crust? Did you blind bake the crust? In your past. So this is a first.
This is a first, and I'm from now on, we're blind baking.
Are you? Okay.
But I just, there's one thing, though. Let me warn you, oh, pie bakers out there. It's really hard. It's not hard. It seems that it still wants to shrink. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. there's nothing holding it, mm-hmm. you know. So mm-hmm. it tends to slide down a little bit. And so I have a really lovely pumpkin pie sitting here, but it's not deep dish by any means. It's almost right. like a flan mm-hmm. thickness mm-hmm. because the crust, you know, it just didn't stay up super high.
Right, right. I had the same experience.
The other thing that's important is then when you make your mixture of pumpkin, is that you let it be room temperature. That you don't, one thing you emphasize is don't put in cold ingredients in
right.
a, because then it takes, it, that'll make even your blind bake crust soggy. Mm-hmm. But if it only has like 40 or 50 degrees to kick in and go up, it doesn't, it makes mm-hmm. it better. Mm-hmm. But, so then here's the other important thing. So use a thermometer,
in the oven,
in a poker, one of those. There's a technical term for it, but
really?
I call it poker. Yeah, 175 in the middle. When it's 175 in the
really?
Middle, take it out.
Oh, yeah. I've never done that with a pie.
Yeah, it totally it made.
Have
it
you
work.
Done that with pie before?
Or is I this have a new not. Trick? I have not. Okay. I've done it with bread.
Yeah,
it's
with
a
bread,
great
I think.
A great use for bread to really at, so you don't have a gummy inside or a dry
I
inside.
I love that idea. 175.
175 okay. pie. Yeah, custard. So anyway, so the pie was great. Mm-hmm. If I do it again, I think what I'll do is you put the pie crust in the refrigerator before you bake it, so it chills and it's really firm.
Uh-huh.
He said he really likes to put it in the freezer. So next time I'm going to try it in mm-hmm. the freezer to see mm-hmm. if it keeps it from shrinking so
okay.
much.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, it's a beautiful pie, Tom. It's lovely.
Thank you, man.
Every pie you've ever made is beautiful.
And here's another tip.
What?
So you're sitting there, you got all these egg whites. Uh-huh. What I was going to do, but I didn't have time because I was really busy looking out the window and,
yeah.
and you know, talking to my chickens.
Drinking coffee.
I was so busy.
Yes.
But I was going to make meringue,
yes.
like a Swiss meringue
or
Italian meringue.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
because you have those egg whites and mm-hmm. you could put that on top too.
Yeah, that would be really good.
Be good.
Yeah. It's a little over the top for pumpkin
it's
pie,
a little
though.
Much. And the pilgrims think, would not have approved
no,
of that.
No, and this pie is perfect. Whatever recipe
thanks.
You used is perfect. And will you say the website again for people so
sure.
they can go?
Chef Steps. I think it's chefsteps.com. It's in
okay.
the market. And they basically are a food studio that tests and tries out recipes, and they're sponsored, I think, mostly by Breville is one of their sponsors.
Oh, good.
Because he baked it in the small little Breville mm-hmm. oven that seemed to work just mm-hmm. fine. Oh, that's another thing. Because he was doing it in a small oven, don't ignore, if you're baking pies, just throw the times out.
Yes.
You know, you
yes.
can keep the first one, the 20 minutes or 25 minutes at 425, but after that, it's total
you just
observation.
Have to keep checking.
Totally
just
observation.
Check.
Yeah. I check every 20 minutes.
Yeah. And I think the other another hint is when you're preheating your oven, like we like to do, is preheat it longer than you think. Just because it says, bing, mm-hmm. ding, ding, it's at 350 or 425, doesn't mean the whole oven is that hot. It means that it's that hot around the thermostat.
Yes.
And so there are colder spots in your oven. So what I do is I do it for at least a half an hour.
Yeah.
Sometimes 45 minutes. And you can tell the difference when you stick your hand in there.
Oh, that's such a good tip. And one of the things you can do too, oh my God, we are serious bakers, Linda Nygaard. We are serious. We're getting like sweat beads over this.
I know,
like,
singing.
Oh my God, wait.
Oh my God. Oh,
and you know what else we can do? So what's really great, Linda, this is perfect, is you say it takes like a half an hour to preheat the oven and get
right.
it up to that temperature. And a lot of times some chefs say, or bakers say, go over the temperature. If it's 350, make it 375. And mm-hmm. then when you put the thing in, then bring it
then
down
bring
to 350.
It down. Yeah.
But the other thing that makes is so great about waiting for it to heat up is then you can put the pie in the refrigerator and let it chill.
Or freezer, yeah.
Or freezer, yeah. And just let it rest. And resting mm-hmm. allows the gluten to relax in the pie dough, so yep. your pie doesn't shrink.
There's big science behind that.
Big science,
big
that's
science
right.
behind
we
that.
We are pie scientists.
May I interject something?
Of course.
Truman, we love it when you say
well,
anything.
Oh, listen, on preheating,
yes,
in an aircraft, we have what we called coal soaked. An airplane might be cold soaked. And even though you've got the temperature up, Once the passengers get on board, they freeze to death because the airplane is still cold, even though the temperature inside might be warm. So we have the same thing.
That's how you cook those passengers.
That's right. That's right. Get those babies up to temp. That's it.
You know, it's so fascinating. There's so much behind it. That reminds me of like when I used to fly like as a passenger and I would see flight attendants had sweaters on. I said, I am doomed because they're going to keep this thing hotter than hot.
Yep,
and I'd be sitting there looking like I was a cabana boy. I was so hot, just taking off everything.
I always get the air going right away.
Exactly. Hey, so you know, Linda, I'm embarrassed.
Why?
I made it all about me again. No, but you made a pie. You made my one of my top five favorite pies, pecan.
Oh, I did.
Tell me about it.
You know, first off, pecan is my favorite pie. And mm-hmm. A little tiny story about pecan pie first is when I was 17 years old, I'd never had pecan pie. I never knew what it was. You know, my mom was Canadian. It was pecan pie.
And you were in Montana.
And I was in Montana, and we didn't have pecan pie. But my best friend's mom was from Memphis. And we had a slumber party at her house, and there were, you know, like 10 girls. And we were all in our pajamas, and we were really hungry in the middle of the night. And my friend said, you know, I think there's some snacks in the freezer. And so we're downstairs. They had this great big room downstairs where we just could stay up all night, which is what we did. And so we went to the freezer, and in the freezer were mini muffin tins. And there were stacks of them, like maybe seven or eight in a stack in the shelf. And inside were these little tiny tarts. And they each had two pecans on top and a little tiny pie crust. And I said, what are those? And she said, oh, those are my mom's mini tarts. Those are pecan tarts. And I said, well, what is that? And she said, well, we'll have to try some, but we'll take some out of the back so she'll never know, right? So...
Kids are so smart.
Oh, we're so smart. So then we ate almost all of them.
Oh.
And her mom knew. And she had baked them for some wonderful thing, you know. But that was my very first taste of pecan pie, and I have never forgotten it. And I've made lots of different pecan pie recipes, and the one that I found in 1972 was, so I was 21 then when I found this, is called USDA pecan pie. And you can look it up on the web. It's under, a lot of people have reprinted it, and it's simple. It's Carol syrup. It's the bad stuff. It's all bad.
Oh, is this it? I just pulled it up because you talked about it. I have it right here.
Yes, it is. That's it.
And, you know, just to assuage people's fears up when they hear corn syrup and they go cover their ears and scream, corn syrup isn't the same as high fructose.
No, it's not.
The stuff like Cairo is a different, it's
a different animal.
Yeah.
Well, this is 4 eggs, a cup of sugar, a little bit of salt, 1.5 cups of dark corn syrup, 2 tablespoons plus 1 teaspoon of melted butter. I never figured that out.
So I think you just put in 3.
I just put in more.
Yeah, cube.
And 1 teaspoon of vanilla. I always put a little more vanilla in it.
Absolutely.
You know, 1.5 at least, sometimes 2. And a cup of pecan halves. And so what I do is...
Do you just put in a cup?
No.
Yeah, of course not.
That's what it says.
I know.
But so what I do is I put the pecans in and then I look at it. And if it looks skimpy, it's like, well, put another handful in there.
Yes.
You know, that's what I do. So for you listeners out there, I was blessed this week because Tom's mom sent him boxes of fresh pecans from Florida.
God bless her.
Oh, God bless her. And I was fortunate enough to get some to try my pie with. And I'll tell you, if you can get fresh pecans, which I have had in the past, but they're not easy to come by way up here. It makes a huge difference. They're nice and light. There's no darkness about them, and they're really crunchy and good.
And fleshy.
Fleshy and just delicious. So my experiment with my tried and true, here's the trouble I've always had with this pie. Always. Soggy crust.
Soggy.
Never. And you know, like that beautiful filling soaks into the crust and gets under the crust.
Yeah.
Always. It doesn't matter what you do. I did discover that if I did an egg wash on it, that sort of helped seal it, but it kind of changed the taste of the pecan pie itself, I thought. So I stopped doing that, and I just thought, well, you know, the crust is the crust, and it's going to be soggy, but it's caramely, and it's like eating toffee and shortbread.
I was going to say, sometimes you just live with your soggy bottom.
Yeah, sometimes you just have to live with it. So I decided this whole blind baking thing that you and I have been talking about, mm-hmm. I'm going to try that with pecan pie and see what happens.
Great idea.
So I did, and I blind baked. I tried a new pie crust recipe, too, which I was really brave in doing all this, you know, but I tried a recipe that uses an egg and vinegar. And I hadn't tried that before, and I love it, and it's going to be my go-to now.
Where'd you find it?
Pioneer Woman.
Oh, yeah.
I love her recipe. She's a good baker, and that's her go-to, so I thought, I'll try that. So I did, and I pre-baked the pie, blind-baked the pie crust, and I did put it in the freezer before I put it in the oven. And I did all the pie weights, and I did all that stuff we just talked about, and that was all fabulous. I did not, however, poke holes in it, because one thing I read said, don't poke holes if you're making a custard pie, because the custard, it'll go in there and go under the, even after it's baked. So I didn't do that. Well, I baked the pie, and while it was beautiful when I took it out of the oven. It was just gorgeous, brown and lovely and nice and crispy crust. The crust is beautiful. But the damn thing soaked through. It didn't matter. It did not help. And what the funny thing was is, I wish I had the whole pie here. I just brought pieces in for the guys.
So do we.
I'm sorry. I was selfish. I wasn't thinking.
Brings these petite little Tupperwares.
Oh, it wasn't petite. It was hardly petite.
Oh, here, let me get my...
Let me get my jeweler's loop
and see what's in there.
Oh, he exaggerates. Please know he exaggerates. Anyway, the fascinating thing about this was when I actually took a slice of pie out of the pie pan, it was like layered. On the very bottom was a layer of the caramel kind of filling, and then there was some crust, and then on top of that was some more pecans and goo. So it was like the crust raised and the filling went under it and on top of it. It was just...
That is odd.
It was very odd. And I, you know, but in the end, like you say, we just have to live with it because I'm not going to fuss over it anymore.
No. You know what I'm thinking you could do too is you save a little like scrap crust.
Yeah.
And then you you take the holes, like, you know, when you do.
I did that. I mean.
Excuse me. Can I finish?
Oh, well, sorry. Don't tell me what to do.
Don't tell me. Okay, let's cut it short. Okay. No, but I was saying, like, you after it comes out, you put in like wet dough and you use it like a spackle where the little docking things are, and maybe try that.
After I'm blind baked.
After you blind baked. And you just, if you see any holes, or you hold it up and you see any holes.
Yeah, I did. There were a couple cracks.
Yeah, use some leftover raw dough as a spackle.
I'll try that. I will try that.
Pretty.
Okay, so what's the verdict? How was the pie, guys?
Oh, crazy good.
Was it?
Crazy good.
Yeah.
I'm originally from West Texas. That's some of the best pecan pie I've ever had.
Oh, bless your heart. It really is.
I agree, Truman.
Do you?
Yeah, it was really good. Do you know the other, I'll make it really quick. I know we don't have much time, but one of my entrees into my first trip to New Orleans, I was at the Camille Grill, and this gentleman asked me if I'd like my pecan pie heated.
Oh.
And I said, and then the woman next to me looks at me, she goes, honey, you want it heated. And I said, okay. And so I was at the counter and he takes it and he takes out of a water bath, a big, butter squirter, and he squirts butter on the grill. He slams the pecan pie and smushes it, pours butter on top of it, reshapes it into the wedge of a pie, puts it on a plate with a big glob of vanilla ice cream, which pushes away the butter. It was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen in my life.
Well, that's the next experiment, okay. I think.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to say, gosh, we're out of time already and we're not even done. I wanted to tell you about celery salad, but we'll have to save that. No, we'll save that till next time.
No, that
time.
Would be, we cannot.
Not after the pie.
We can't. No, celery salad, we'll lose listeners. They go, what's?
Oh, I'm not talking about that.
What's next? Pimento loaf?
Well, I hope everybody out there has a beautiful, beautiful Thanksgiving, however you spend it. You know, some people don't really honor Thanksgiving and some people do. I have friends who are going out for dim sum on Thanksgiving, and I think that sounds fun.
Yeah.
They're in Tacoma. They're going to do that. And I have some friends who are staying alone and just kind of using the day to get caught up on things they want to get caught up on, or read a book or sit by the fire. So whatever you do out there.
And it's nice to, you know, I not to get all schmaltzy, but as I get older, I think one of the most important things on a daily basis is to have gratitude, show gratitude.
Just anyway.
We have really great lives here.
We're very lucky.
Yeah,
I'm grateful to live on Vashon. Totally mm-hmm. grateful to live here. And I, you know, it's really important that we keep our loved ones and good friends close to our hearts mm-hmm. and in our eyesight if we can. Now,
help our neighbors and
do the kinds of things. You know,
build community.
Yeah. We have a wonderful community, and so many people are just ready to help. It's like, you need something? Oh, okay. All right. So,
Truman, Linda,
we have some bye-bye music? Truman forgot the music.
Hey, Linda, let's thank Truman. Thank you, Truman.
Thank you so much. Yeah. What do we
He's
do
such
without
a guy.
You?
We love
yes.
him.
We
I'm
love
lost.
Truman. There we are. Okay, everybody. Thank you for listening, and enjoy your weekend. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.